Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. In that first segment, we had an astrobiologist explain to us that, despite some short-term challenges on the battle against climate change, we should hold out hope for humanity's continued existence here on Earth. And that's kind of a relief. There's a ton of work to do on carbon emissions, of course, but that light at the end of the tunnel does not seem to be a locomotive, at least. In this next segment, we double down on the hope sentiment. We have a couple of hope examples that walk on two legs, children and Elon Musk. We also take a look at Silicon Valley's role in helping the planet rid itself of the damage we called in the last segment environmental vandalism.
I mean, of course, there's this wonderful technology that does exist that takes carbon dioxide out of the air and uses solar energy and creates food. That's called a leaf. All you smart guys here in the Bay Area can look at that and say, okay, so that's not physically impossible. How can we enhance that and do it a little bit better and even find a way to make a profit off of it?
Finding a dead planet to terraform, encouraging kids who see themselves as global stewards, and the battle over bacteria on Mars. That's right now on Techonomics. And we left off with kind of a hope around technology, which is a common theme here in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, of course. Surviving crises through technology. One thing you mentioned was the carbon footprint that we have and reducing said carbon footprint. What are you seeing there?
Our most immediate task, of course, is to just get over the vandalism of the climate that we're committing now. And I talk a lot in the book about getting beyond the stage of inadvertent, unconscious planetary change, which we've been doing, and moving to a phase of intentional, aware planetary change, which is what we need to do. You know, we can't just stop being planet changers. We've inherited that role. We've created that role for ourselves. And we can't just take our hands off the wheel without doing even more damage. So we have to learn how to be good drivers, in a sense.
Stewards of the Earth.
Yeah, exactly. And we will need to do some repair from the phase that we're in now.
Okay.
We obviously have to cut back on our carbon effluence, and we're doing that. We will do that. It's painfully slow to see it happening, but you can see everywhere the signs. Even, you know, the Chinese are getting serious about this now. They have to, because their cities are unlivable with air pollution. So they can't just dig up and burn all their coal. They just made this huge investment in alternative energy, you know, between the Chinese and what Bill Gates just invested in.
Yes.
Energy breakthroughs. And, you know, this is many of the powers that be are starting to get serious about this. We may have a little bit of a setback in this country right now, but I think in the big picture, there's reasons to believe that may not be catastrophic at all, that the trends are still positive. But then what do we do? You know, we'll get to the end of the century. We'll have a new energy system. But that carbon left in the atmosphere will last for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And we don't want to have 500, 600 parts per million carbon for 100,000 years.
Right.
That's very damaging because of ocean acidification and losing the sea ice and all this. But I think we will be drawing carbon down. There are ways to do that. I mean, of course, there's this wonderful technology that does exist that takes carbon dioxide out of the air and uses solar energy and creates food. That's called a leaf. You know, and those have been around for a long time. But that's proof. That's an existence proof that physics and chemistry exists.
Mm-hmm.
And all you smart guys here in the Bay Area can look at that and say, okay, so that's not physically impossible. How can we enhance that and do it a little bit better and even find a way to make a profit off of it? And you know that's coming. You know, people are already doing it. It's just expensive. But if there was if there was ever a problem that there was big incentive for technological breakthroughs in this next century, it's going to be, okay, what can we do that will take carbon out of the air and make somebody money? And you know that's coming. I know it's coming.
It's wonderful to hear you mention. I was helping my 7-year-old with her science project, and she asked, what does the friction of leaves create? There is an experimental tree that is shaped, it's a turbine that's shaped like a leaf in a tree in a park in France. And so that's going to be her science project. And now I can have a PhD come in and tell me and my daughter that we're on the right track. That's phenomenal.
Well, I'm glad your daughter's thinking about this, because honestly, when I think about sources of hope and sources of pessimism, you know, I'm so heartened by the kids now are growing up so smart. They're growing up aware of our global challenges, and they are global citizens. I mean, you can look at the recent election, and I think for a lot of, you know, scientifically savvy people, it's discouraging, and I'm concerned about it. A lot of people are, but at the same time, you can also look at it as sort of the last gasp of some old guard, and, you know, look at the way the young people voted. They weren't the problem. And when I go around and talk to kids and hear the questions they ask and the insight, they're growing up in this world. They're connected. They're aware of the fact that we live on a planet. And, you know, it's your daughter and her peers. I have great faith that they're, you know, we have to hand them a world that's as untrashed as we can. But I have a lot of faith that the coming generation is going to have the perspective and the knowledge that's going to allow them to do much better than we have.
I hope that we leave them with enough tools to correct what you refer to as environmental vandalism, which has been going on for a long, long time. And you're right. It is kind of tough to be in the middle of this washing machine right now as we evolve out of it and towards cleaner energy, which is a major source of the problem that we're facing and the problem that you handle in your book, Earth in Human Hands. It's shaping our planet's future. We're talking with Dr. David Grinspoon. And while I have you again, I'm going to keep you a little bit longer. We started early, so I'm going to keep you a little bit late. I don't know how that logic works, but I'm going to ask you for the...
Works for me. Works for me.
Very cool. Because, you know, something we have here, an occasional series, a little tongue-in-cheek, called This Week in Elon Musk. And one of the features, of course, is SpaceX and the colonization of Mars. He's very vocal about this. And I'm wondering, just from your perspective as an astrobiologist, somebody who's been in the field for a long, long time, somebody who studied here at Ames, at NASA Ames, I'm wondering, what do you think about, you said Earth in human hands in your book. What about Mars in human hands?
Yeah, well, I do talk about the ideas about terraforming other planets quite a bit in the book because, to me, it goes hand in hand. Once we start becoming aware of our role on this planet and trying to conceptualize a new role, which is rather than inadvertently messing with the planet, sort of accidentally thinking about, well, how would we consciously interact with the planet? And in an aware way, knowing about planets and understanding our own influence, how would we guide it? And what I love about the ideas about terraforming is, in a way, it's the same problem. How would you consciously interact with a planet? How would you choose your role on it rather than stumbling into it? So, of course, terraforming raises all kinds of complex issues, ethical issues, technical issues. I'm not a fan of saying, hey, let's go nuke the poles on Mars and just terraform it like that. And I think, you know, I mean, I have huge respect for Elon Musk. I don't agree with everything he says about what we should do on Mars, but I appreciate the fact that he's out there getting people to think about what we should do
on Mars. That's fair enough.
It's a valuable conversation starter. I don't think that things will unfold exactly the way he's projecting, but he is helping move us along by putting it out there. And I think that's cool. The terraforming of Mars, should we actually do it? I'm very cautious about that. For one thing, we have to understand if there are any Martians. Mm-hmm. We don't want to accidentally commit ecocide of a planet. But on the other hand, if we learn a lot more about Mars and a lot more about life and determine that Mars is lifeless, then there's, I think, a very powerful ethical argument that, yeah, let's take that vacant lot next door and plant a garden in it.
Right.
Especially if we've got a garden that's full of endangered species and we can ensure their survival by planting them in that vacant lot next door. And then you realize that in a certain sense, those threatened species are all of life on Earth. And that vacant lot that we could protect those species with by planting a garden is Mars and the other planets. If they really are lifeless, then yeah, let's spread life.
Right.
Life is good, you know, and we want Earth life. We love life. We want Earth life to survive. So let's spread it around and make sure that it will survive. So I think there's a powerful argument to do that, but we're also not ready. We have to learn a lot more about how planets work and about how life works. But that is the same kind of knowledge that we need anyways to do a better job of managing ourselves and assuming the right role here on Earth. It's learning how planets work and learning how life works. So in that larger sense, the effort to know what we need to know to terraform Mars is the same effort to know what we need to know to preserve life on Earth.
So would you say ballpark estimation of a potential terraforming of another planet, let's assume that it is found to be dead or extinct of life, would that be 22nd century, 23rd century?
It won't be this century, I don't believe. I think 22nd century is conceivable to start such a project.
I see.
Because I think by then it's possible we'll know enough about life. We may have even examined several planets with life because with these exoplanets now that we can see planets around other stars and the instruments we're developing, we're going to be able to look at 1,000 planets and say, does that one have life? And, you know, and maybe find a few that do have life. And then we'll be much smarter about the influence of life on a planet. And we may be able to determine that Mars really is dead, in which case we may have the ethical grounding. And I think at that point, we may have the technical grounding to say, yeah, we can handle this. Let's start doing something with Mars. If you know, and again, that involves a large conversation and a lot of buy-in. If we determine there are Martians, then that, I think, really gives us a different, you know, set of challenges.
Right.
And I would at this point say, let's be hands off. Even if they're just bacteria, let's not, you know, let's think about the prime directive and not interfere with life there. But, you know, that would be an interesting argument. If it's just bacteria, some people will say, well, it's just bacteria. And I would probably say, but they're Martian bacteria. You know, that's precious.
Right.
So I think that might lead to another interesting argument.
That was part two of our chat with Dr. David Grinspoon. He's the author of a new book titled Earth in Human Hands, Shaping Our Planet's Future. He's also an astrobiologist at NASA. Keep in mind that you don't have to take notes while we broadcast. You can just podcast it for reference. Check out KGORadio.com's podcast page for all of our segments on Techonomics. We also handpick and then hand post our musical selections. That playlist lives on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Coming up after the break, our third and last segment with astrobiologist Dr. David Grinspoon, in which we ask the burning question about the future. Is it more like Star Trek or is it more like Mad Max? This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.